off the back of one of the biggest upsets in modern racing history, which was live here. Racing TV International, Honeysuckle, beaten for the first time on her 17th.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll do some stakes recaps. We'll do a little handicapping as well. But part of the stakes recaps a little bit later on, we'll be joined by Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Always like to look at the two-year-olds late in the season. We'll do some of that as far as New York is concerned as well. But they had a couple of juvenile races at Laurel yesterday, so we'll get a little recap from Frank on that action. I'll take a look at some of the action otherwise, because speaking of two-year-olds, it was an all two-year-old card yesterday at Tampa, which was a lot of fun. And the Remsen and the Demoiselle on the card at Aqueduct. So there was some two-year-old action all around. And again, this late in the season, you tend to think, stakes winners at this time may be worth looking at as the calendar turns in a few weeks and they become three-year-olds. And I think that is likely the case from some of the two-year-olds we saw yesterday across the country. Also out at Del Mar, it's closing weekend, and they had some nice stakes action yesterday. They will continue with that today as well. But going back to yesterday at Aqueduct, we had Dave Grenig on yesterday, and we kind of went through the stakes highlighted by the Cigar Mile, the Demoiselle, the Remsen, and the Gopher Juan. And mentioned it with Dave, mentioned it on the Handicappers Report as we looked at some of those stakes races. They had nice storylines that were adding some fun potential to it. And they all kind of played out perfectly with not just the races being fun and very entertaining, but the storylines built into it as well. We'll take a look, in fact, at one of the top storylines from yesterday. Cigar Mile was obviously the highlight, the last grade one of the year in New York. I had Mind Control on top, but when Dave Grenig was on yesterday, he said, boy, I don't know whether Mind Control will go or not, because having talked to the connections over the months and whatnot, they just do not want to go on an off track with Mind Control. That said, yesterday was going to be Mind Control's career finale. And so what do you do? Maybe you just pull the trigger and hope for the best. And that, in fact, is what they did. They said, it was the last race planned for them. There weren't any real logical other options. And so they elected to go despite the off going. John Velasquez was on board for Todd Pletcher. And Velasquez said, early on, I didn't know whether he was handling it. But, man, this is a ding-dong battle. That's Mind Control, the number seven, right in the middle with Got Her Number, who I also thought was interesting. Coming up the rail, it's White Abario. And Zandon winds up fourth and a non-threatening fourth. But, boy, you see there, Mind Control puts out his nose and just will not let the other two go by. That was some performance and a great way to go out. But the 3-1 second choice, Zandon was the 3-5 favorite. And again, there was a point in the stretch early on where it looked like, oh, he's going to swing out and get a little momentum and maybe go by that dueling trio. But he just never got that momentum going. And as I say, Zandon's a non-threatening fourth in there in his first try against older horses. Guaito Barrio, his first try against older horses as well. He ran well. He wound up third behind Mind Control and Get Her Number, but again, you saw it. It was a ding-dong battle. But Mind Control, boy, you know, if you were on social media yesterday, everybody was kind of saluting the performance and saluting the career. Grade one at two, grade one at three. Now adds a grade one at age six as he heads off to retirement and just has a career. I pulled up yesterday as we talked about the race with Dave Grenig. I pulled up the Salvatore Mile because I thought, I put Mind Control on top, and that was kind of the race I was hanging my hat on. It does very well at the mile distance and the Salvatore Mile this past June. Just a ding-dong battle with Hot Rod Charlie that kind of showed the tenacity he had and played out again yesterday. Really a fabulous performance. Oh, and let me see. Should have pulled it up earlier. But speaking of Dave Grenig, I saw that he had tweeted out buyer numbers for these New York Stakes yesterday. Let me see if I can quickly pull that up, because I think it was a 100 even for, Mind Control, 100 buyer. So a nice number he goes out with, pairs up triple digit 100s, going back to the close up performance in the Parks Dirt Mile. It got him moved up on the DQ. That was a 100 also. Puts a 100 in with, again, just a gutsy display there. Again, it was John Velasquez and Todd Pletcher, a very familiar duo on the New York scene over the years. And speaking of over the years, that was Todd Pletcher's sixth Cigar Mile victory. Not pretty good. Record there. Speaking of six, there was also the sixth time Mind Control had won by either a nose or a head. It just the will to win does not want to be beaten. So again, really nice performance, and as I say, put a nice exclamation point on the day, and I guess the grade one year as well in New York with a performance that really kind of stood out and very entertaining, very satisfying. And as I say, social media kind of stepped back and tipped their cap to Mind Control after the gutsy performance yesterday. John Velasquez in the winner's circle was also kind of effusive about the horse. He'd been on the horse many times in the career. And just, you know, one of those that as racing fans we like to see continued racing through the end of the six-year-old season and was at the top level of the game from start to finish for the most part. And so Mind Control, fun yesterday. Speaking of storylines, one race earlier, it was the Gopher Wand. I like the winner here, too. That was a decent day for me down at Aqueduct yesterday, if you pulled up the one sheet. I thought Dr. B was interesting in here, coming out of the second place finish in the Pumpkin Pie in the previous start. Dr. B goes out to the lead and takes him all the way around on a merry chase. That is Dr. B in front, the number seven. Running second will be the very talented New York-bred Bank Sting. And Betsy Blue runs third in here, another New York-bred. But chart margin here is 4.25 lengths. 3-1 second choice was Dr. B. Bank Sting was the favorite. But no threat there, as Dr. B does get it done for Butch Reed, comes in. I think Butch was, I read a quote, something like, I like that New York money, Butch, based down at Parks. And he's done all right this year. There was a stakes winner up in New York as well, up in Saratoga as well. This horse ran second up in Saratoga. But Dr. B, as I say, adds to the storylines. First, let me hit on Dr. B. As I said, Butch Reed said, I'd like to get that money in New York. So he came to New York. Now he's going to potentially pick up the money in Maryland, because he said perhaps, not set in stone, but perhaps the Barbara Fritchie next for Dr. B. But a pretty nice performance. It was career win number 5 and career start number 16. And I would think with the purse there, we are well over $300,000 in earnings now in 16 career starts. So a nice little 4-year-old filly, soon to be a 5-year-old. And again, potentially headed to the Barbara Fritchie. But storyline there, Irod Ortiz gets the victory. John Embriel noted it as they came under the finish line. Sets the record for stakes wins in a year. Been chasing it for a while. The press release put out by the New York Press Office, kind of interesting. Irod Ortiz said, I didn't realize the record is something I didn't even know until a week before the Breeders' Cup. And he said in the winner's circle that his agent kind of said, hey, you know what? We're right here. We maybe want to concentrate on this a little bit. And if you noticed, Mahoning Valley last week on the holiday week, they had the Steel Valley Sprint and some other stakes races. And Irod was out in Ohio, Mahoning Valley, and he picked up a couple of stakes victories out there to add to the total. He said in the winner's circle, you know, I wanted to do it today because I believe he was leaving last night. I think he said, I'm leaving tonight. But I think the game plan is he's going to be in Gulfstream today. So he's it's funny. The Cigar Mile is really the turning point. If you watch the winner's circle today, it won't surprise me if some of the New York trainers that maybe were in New York yesterday are already down there, because I think it is, as I say, kind of the transition, Cigar Mile Saturday, and then the trainers and jockeys that tend to spend the winter in Florida, I think Cigar Mile is their day, and then they head out. But Irod, I'm virtually certain he said last night, but that was his last day based in New York, and being a New York-based guy, mainly, he wanted to get the record in New York. And so he was pretty happy that he did it. Broke the record with 77 stakes wins, broke the record of 76 that was set in 2007 by Garrett Gomez. And again, it was kind of a done deal that he had another month to do it, but he did want to get it done in New York, and so he managed to do that yesterday. But again, the press release that was sent out notes what a remarkable season he has had, lists the grade one wins amongst those. These are just 77 stakes wins that got him the record, but the grade one wins among that this year, the Belmont Stakes, the New York, the Frisette, the Hopeful, the Ballerina, the Woodward and the Whitney with Life is Good, McCulloch, the Belmont Oaks Invitational. The Alabama and the Coaching Club American Oaks with Nest also won a couple of Breeders' Cup races with Forte and Elite Power. Just a heck of a season for Irod Ortiz. And I was going to say caps it off. I don't know. Interesting to see how the next 3 weeks go for him. Because it isn't the capper to the season necessarily. There are 3 more weeks, and we'll see where he winds up as far as some stakes. I mean, there are a couple of grade ones a little bit later this month out at Santa Anita. I don't know whether he'll travel out there. But if it doesn't cap the season, it certainly puts a nice end to the New York part of the season for him and does get him the record, which, again, he now has 3 weeks to add to as well. So another one of the fun storylines yesterday at Aqueduct, equine and human stories that just played out very, very well. In the 2-2-year-old races, the Remsen, I like Tuskegee Airmen. Luis Sayet, Tuskegee Airmen's going to wind up third here as we watch number 2 horse. Luis Sayet seemed to indicate, didn't really take to the off-going perhaps. But WNL and Arctic Arrogance put on some stretch battle here. Again, adding to a really nice day. And I think these are 2-2-year-olds to watch. Now, you have to wonder, Tuskegee Airmen, let's give him another try in a dry track. Maybe just didn't like the off-going. And these two maybe really took to it. I still think they're going to be very nice horses, though. Arctic Arrogance, a nice New York bred. And WNL, Only a couple of career starts so far, and Dave Grenick talked about this horse yesterday and thought WNL was interesting. He mentioned the debut effort up at Saratoga. It was a fourth, but it was a fourth behind Instant Coffee, who was the stakes winner for Al Gold and Brad Cox last week out of town. Subsequently broke the maiden on the return down to Belmont at Aqueduct, and that was over a sloppy track. So again, we have to find out maybe a little bit more on a dry track for WNL. But as I say, I think both of these are going to prove to be nice little three-year-olds moving forward. Certainly Linda Rice has a very nice New York bred. I mean, the Arctic Arrogance, a solid second there, and had done well against New York breds, winning a stake and running second in a stake against New York breds, but stepped out into open company yesterday and ran well. And that just means all kinds of options going forward as a three-year-old. And I think Tuskegee Airmen is worth another look going forward. So the top two certainly worth watching, and Tuskegee Airmen I still think is legitimate. So two-year-old action that will play in the next year as three-year-olds, and in fact, WNL, Danny Gargan trains. He said WNL will head down to Florida, but he might come back for the Withers. And Gargan added, boy, I'd love to win the Wood here in New York. So we'll see what path WNL winds up taking. It wasn't set in stone, but he said maybe back to New York for the Withers, and then indicated kind of be fun to move on to the Wood perhaps. But as I say, that was not in any way set in stone. And finally, what I thought, and again, it played out, there was plenty of storylines, but what I thought was the storyline, or the most intriguing horse, I said yesterday on the Handicappers Report, and then reiterated that with Dave Grenick, was Julius Shiny, the sibling to Malathat, who debuted down at Keeneland and had a crazy performance where she came out, didn't like the kickback, went way to the back, seemed like, sibling to Malathat is not going to do well in her debut, and then started a sustained run on the backstretch, big looping move, and won pretty easily down at Keeneland in the debut. That said, when you see a performance like that, you wonder, is this horse that good? That's possible. Or is the field a little weak? And the buyer number, the 71, maybe indicated it was a little bit of a weak bunch. That said, I put Julia Shining on yesterday. I wanted to go in another direction, but looking at this particular field, I thought, you know what, I think she's maybe best in here regardless. And as I say, the question mark was, who did she beat down at Keeneland? Well, the horse that ran second subsequently came back in the next start and broke the maiden. So that flattered Julia Shining too. So I tilted towards her, but I had question marks. That said, her running style is now Zenyatta, because you can see her there on the outside way wide. And when she straightens out, man, she gets the momentum going. And she was once again very far back early. So as I say, that may be her running style. She gets the momentum here. Chart margin's going to be a neck. Affirmative Lady was the horse that I thought could be the possible alternative. Graham Motion brings in this maiden. She ran pretty well here, Affirmative Lady. So Graham Motion has a nice runner. But Julia Shining gets it done from way off the pace. Very similar to the first start. I said yesterday, I'm in the same conundrum I was in after the Keeneland race, because it was such a crazy move. Once again, you kind of left with, how good is she really? And the number, a 70. So she fired a 71 in the debut and a 70 yesterday. I'm still not sure what to make of Julia Shining. I will also say the time for the Demoiselle was 153.05. The boys in the Remsen went 150.88. So a couple of seconds plus faster. That's fairly significant. So hats off to the two performances where there was no point early in the race where you thought Julia Shining was going to be able to get it done, but she managed to make that big move in both of them. And two for two now for Todd Pletcher and Stone Street. Luis Saez on board. But again, they were just so stunning that you're left wondering, was that real or was the field a little weak? And the numbers are not jumping off the page by any means, but she's gotten it done. So we'll see what happens going forward with Julia Shining. She was an interesting story yesterday. She kind of validated what we saw, but I think, for me anyway, still maybe left some question marks. So going to be interesting to watch her going forward, as I say. And again, just one of the fun races, entertaining races, and great storylines on kind of the capper to the big stakes action in New York for the season. Just an appropriate wind-up to that, you know, that stakes action at that level in New York. Yesterday at Del Mar, a couple of races. I didn't call for the replay of the Jimmy Durante, but I will note Liguria got it done for Chad Brown. So there were some New York or some East Coast connections going out to Del Mar yesterday and getting it done with Liguria in the Jimmy Durante as the 7-5 favorite in a field of 12. So nice win there for Chad and company, Flavien Prat on board. But we will take a look at the Hollywood Derby. Talked a little bit about this yesterday on the Handicappers Report. Witt was in here. Witt for Mike Rapoli and Todd Pletcher. We had Mike on this summer before Witt had tried the grass up at Saratoga. And he said, you know, we've worked the horse out and Witt's going to be okay. Subsequent to that, finished second in the Hall of Fame and then won the Better Talk Now up at Saratoga. Second, close up second in a stake on the grass at Keeneland in the previous start. So Witt goes off as the 9-5 favorite out at Hollywood or out at Del Mar yesterday in the Hollywood Derby. The number 9 horse, though, winds up third. Spy Catcher at 33-1. The number 7 runs second, but it's going to be the number 10 Speaking Scout getting it done. Juan Hernandez for Grand Motion. Grand Motion sends Speaking Scout out. And does get it done. They had tried the Twilight Derby at Santa Anita at the end of October, and they were a close-up second. Subsequently, get the win here, but you go a couple starts back before yesterday, won the Hawthorne Derby. So it's kind of a fun, little, interesting three-year-old on the turf. That subdivision I like quite a bit. And they picked their spots, and it just seems, if you look at the PPs, this horse has gotten better at the end of the season, starting with that win in the Hawthorne Derby, then the close-up second in the Twilight Derby, the win yesterday at 8-1, $18.40. But again, it seems like over the last three races, this horse has kind of turned the corner and become a talented runner to keep our eyes on. And I say that because this was a three-year-old event, so I would think this will be a solid four-year-old to watch for Grand Motion on the turf next year. Don't forget, Del Mar today has some stakes action as well. The Cecil B. DeMille, a mile on the grass for the two-year-olds. That one should be fun. And then the Matriarch, grade one event, $400,000 for the fillies and mares on the turf. And this one has some notable East Coast connections. I will say, Wakanaka, according to what I read, Wakanaka will not participate because that's a Belmont runner, but based with his string at Churchill and given the situation at Churchill with that equine herpes quarantine, Wakanaka, as I understand, check your scratches and whatnot, but I understand that one will not run. But still have Dolce Zell for Chad Brown, Regal Glory for Chad Brown, and Peter Brandt, and Pizza Bianca for Christophe Clement and Bobby Flay. So that's today at Del Mar, the Grade 1 Matriarch. Also wanted to toss out, this is the last day at Del Mar. That means, as always, last day at any of the venues. Mandatory pay, and the Rainbow Six is at $500,000. So the Rainbow Six today out at Del Mar, or whatever they call there. I'm not sure it's the Rainbow. They all have different names. but whatever it is called, $500,000 up for grabs with mandatory pays today at Del Mar. So keep that in mind. And I also, you know, as we get to the end of the meet, also like to look up the human side of things. On the jockey side, as we come into the final day of the Del Mar meet, Juan Hernandez, a 2-win lead over Flavian Prat. It's going to come down to those two because Prat is 8 ahead of Ramon Vasquez. So it comes down to Hernandez and Prat, with Hernandez having a 2-win lead going into today. Trainer battle, that's a done deal. Phil D'Amato, 17 wins so far. Tied behind him are Baffert and Papa Prodromo. They both have 7. So a 17-7 win lead for Phil D'Amato, as they say. He's got it sewn up. But jockey battle might be a little bit interesting today. All right, before we head to a break, also wanted to take a look at the 2-year-old action yesterday at Tampa. The inaugural was for the 2-year-old boys. And this is going to be an interesting horse to watch. And as with all 3-year-olds, interesting to watch and see if they try to stretch out. Given that they haven't so far, it won't shock me if Delgado and company decide Super Chow is a bona fide sprinter and they stick with that. But again, you have a talented 3-year-old, and that's what this horse will be in a few weeks. Do you try to stretch out? All of that said, so far in the career, Super Chow won the debut at Gulfstream, then 3rd in the Saratoga Special at Saratoga, then a couple of wins coming into this, and is the number 7 horse here, and makes a nice move to get it done by a chart margin of 2.5 as the 3-5 favorite. 33-1, Handsome Playboy runs 2nd, and Dreaming of Kona runs 3rd. But Super Chow, now 4 wins in 5 career starts, a couple of stakes victories, the 3rd place finish in the Saratoga Special there as well. So that was a nice performance from Super Chow for, as they say, Delgado. Chantel Sutherland came over for the ride. They're talking about potentially, and again, this is not set in stone, but they may shoot for the Pasco on January 14th down at Tampa as the next start, which, you know, potentially is a stepping stone to the Tampa Bay Derby. But again, it won't shock me given what we've seen so far if they just say, you know what, we have a pretty talented sprinter. Let's be happy with that. But we'll see. Again, there have been plenty of horses in the past where we have thought similar things, we as racing fans. And the siren call of the Derby is out there. And so they may try a couple of turns, but we'll see. In the Sandpiper, it was for the 2-year-old girls a little earlier on the card at Tampa, and it's going to be Dorth Vader getting it done. This was career win number 3 and career start number 5. This one also had a stakes victory under the belt already. The number 5 is Dorth Vader. Number 1, Awesome Pick, winds up 2nd, and number 6, Lady Radler runs 3rd. But again, pretty clear victory here with the margin being 2.25 as the second choice at 9-5 for Michael Yates and Manessis on board. And they're also looking at that January 4th stakes day. Perhaps the Gasparilla is next. I didn't mention Super Chow. This was kind of interesting as well. Super Chow, 5 starts and 4 career wins. 2-year-old with 5 starts at 5 different tracks. So, again, Super Chow, I would, as I say, think, hope they keep sprinting, but we'll see. But if so, I think a 3-year-old to watch on the sprint scene next year, Super Chow, from what we've seen so far from the 2-year-old season. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, do a little handicapping action. And again, they had a couple of 2-year-old stakes out at Laurel yesterday as well. So in a few minutes, we'll be joined by Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Get his take on the action down in Maryland yesterday. But before that, a little handicapping for this afternoon. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll look at some of the action for Sunday afternoon. Stay tuned.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. I just realized I didn't give you a couple of the other buyers from New York yesterday. As I say, Dave Greinich tweeted them out. Mind Control had the 100. Julius Shining on the other end with the 70. But Dr. B, 103. Nice performance there. And WNL had a 90. Again, for a two-year-old this time of year, that 90 is a nice little number for the Danny Gargan trainee also. So, again, fun day down in New York yesterday. Today in New York, I'm going to take a look. I have a couple of New York Stallion Series stakes races in that late pick four. So I'll preview that, not putting a ticket together, just giving you some ideas here because I don't have scratches at this point. But, excuse me. In the sixth race, kicks off the late pick four down in New York today. We're looking at state-bred non-winners of one other than going a mile. I have it 6-5-4-3. Mia Be a Star, short-priced favorite. Not sure if in the pick four whether I'd totally lean on this one. Clearly has the edge and deserves, you know, the short-priced favoritism. But 17 starts this year and only one win. So maybe a little bit camera shy. Again, on the numbers and in the current form, probably does have the edge, but Gringotts, I thought, on a best performance could be a little bit interesting. Now, this one is 0-13 this year. But again, you're looking for an alternative. This one's 8-1 on the morning line. I think you get a price. Dufresne, probably better on the turf. And again, this is one of those experiments this time of year. Coming into the non-turf season, you test a little bit, experiment. Do we have a horse that we can keep running throughout the winter? I will say, you go back to October of last year, the race on the dirt wasn't bad. The first race of the career at Saratoga, well, the July 16th race at Saratoga. Again, not bad. I can make a little case there as well. Juliana's Rose probably has to step it up of being lightly raced. That's not out of the question. So again, Mia Be a Star does have the edge on this bunch and deserves to be a short-priced favorite. But with one win and 17 starts this year, I wouldn't argue if somebody's taking a shot. As always with the pick bets, though, it's how big you want your ticket to be. Do you have a big price a little bit later on? Maybe a single, maybe you don't. Pick wagering is always it's a different strategy day to day because it depends on what you see in each of the legs. And, you know, small ticket, big ticket, how much you want to spend and how much you think you should spend if you think it's going to play out a little bit logically. But in the 6-5-4-3. As I say, a couple of New York Stallion Series stakes on the card. The 7th, Phillies and Mayors, 3-year-olds and up going 7. I have it 5, 6, 2, and 3 in the seventh at Aqueduct Bank on Anna. Tossed in a clunker last time, and it has the look of one you can draw a line through because the rest of the races are just too good to ignore, including a nice stakes victory at Saratoga against State Breds, two starts back. So I'm going to look for the rebound here for Bank on Anna. Impossible Donna in good form, has some nice positional early speed, has a little wet track experience that may be beneficial. Given what we saw yesterday, the track is certainly still, you would think, going to be off. Yo Cuz, I didn't know what to do with. I'm going to be really interested to see where the betting public goes. This is a horse that showed flashes of talent, real talent, early in the career. And then kind of in April and May of this year, put in a couple of clunkers, has been on the sidelines since. What do we get today? I don't know, but I do think Yo Cuz has that back class that says you got to watch out a little bit. In the seventh at Aqueduct, 5, 6, 2, and 3. The eighth race, again, New York Stallion Series runners, 3-year-olds and up, going 7. The seventh, the girls. The eighth, the boys. Our friends up at Eddie F's in Saratoga have Chowda in here. Hasn't been seen since May, but certainly has the ability, if ready to roll. I went in another direction, a few other directions, though. 1, 8, 5, and 4. Some like it hot brown. More of a turf runner, but boy, you look at that off the turf or the West Point up at Saratoga. I kind of couldn't get by that. This is a really, really nice New York bred. Well over $1.5 million in the bank. Competitive against open company, open stakes company, open graded stakes company. And again, given that off-the-turf try back in August, I'm sure they said, you know what, $125,000. We're knocking heads with graded open company. We have some good dirt for them. Let's go up and see if we can steal it maybe on the front end. If that's not the case, Bank It comes out of a couple of nice state bred stakes performances most recently. But the most recent one was a second place finish. You know, nice performance. But behind someone like it, Hot Brown in that off the turf West Point. And then My Boy Tate in the third spot. Another nice, talented New York bred coming out of a win in the Hudson most recently. So for me in the eighth, 1, 8, 5, and 4. I think it's an interesting race with some like it, Hot Brown in here. And finally, at Aqueduct in the ninth, conditional claimers, 9, 2, 5, and 8. I'll put Ginsu Warrior on top. Again, seems a little more turf meant. The dirt races are okay, though, particularly when you look at this field. And this horse is getting some class relief that's going to help mitigate that surface switch. Because, again, you look at the rest of this bunch, I think what we've seen on the dirt from Ginsu Warrior indicates maybe an interesting player in here. Our friends at America's Pastime Racing, part of the group behind Sinful Dancer, comes out of a maiden breaker in career start number 14 last time, but has shown races underneath that are right in the thick of things with this bunch. Has some nice positional early speed and should be a player. And Goldquist in the third spot. This is another one that's probably more turf meant. The last two dirt races weren't much, but the career debut in an off-the-turfer was pretty good. So I wasn't quite sure which way to go with this one. I tend to think probably not, but class-wise, again, that may mitigate the surface switch. So I had to throw it in the mix. In the ninth at Aqueduct, 9, 2, 5, and 8. There are some ideas. The late pick for Aqueduct today, including a couple of nice stakes, New York bred, New York Stallion stakes. They aren't necessarily New York breds, although I think most of them were. I think, if I remember right, there was one Kentucky bred in there, though, because, again, it's a New York Stallion series. We will head to a break once again and then back for more two-year-old action. As I said earlier, nice two-year-olds yesterday down at Tampa, the Remsen and Demoiselle in New York, and a couple of two-year-old stakes down at Laurel and two-year-old stakes this time of year. Always fun to take a look at and try to decide if we should keep our ear to the ground with these horses as they turn three. And the two coming out of the the Laurel Stakes probably have some potential as well. More than two, but certainly the two winners. So we'll talk with Frank Vespi when we come back, covering racing in the Mid-Atlantic region for the RacingBiz.com. So we'll get his thoughts on the Laurel action from yesterday right after this. Stay tuned.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Frank Vespi from the RacingBiz.com. No better place to follow racing in the Mid-Atlantic region than the Racing Biz. Frank, good morning.
Hello, Mr. Merrill. How are you today?
Very good. Happy to have you on board. And I got to ask, the last time we had you on was before Thanksgiving. So I have to ask if you participated in the best giveaway in all of horse racing and picked up a pie down at Laurel.
You know what? For the first time in many years, I did not get out to the track on Thanksgiving Day this year. I had some responsibilities to take care of around the home front, so I didn't get out there. But I have many, many times enjoyed going out and getting the free pie. The free pie giveaway is, you know, that's the one giveaway a year you can guarantee that's going to pull them in. So it's always fun.
Yeah, as I say, I am envious of that one. And I always laugh, and if I have Dave Rodman on the show, we'll talk about it. And he reminisces the day when there was three pie choices, including the minced meat. And I always say, yeah, that I have no problem that they did away with that. Give me the apple every time.
Yeah, it's apple and pumpkin these days. But there's some folks who remember the mincemeat fondly, and a couple who say that was the only mince pie I would eat. So,
well, okay.
And there's some other good memories, too. There was one year where the bakery that they always used closed, so they made the pies in-house, which in some ways didn't go very well, but left the whole facility smelling like apple pie for like 2 weeks afterwards, which is kind of cool.
That's what Dave has reminisced about, the booth smelling a lot like pie. And I said, oh, that sounds okay to me. I think I can live with that. Before we get to the two races yesterday, just checking on the Racing Biz, and you had an article, and I wanted you to touch on that a little bit, because I had Matt Haggerty on a couple weeks ago with that court decision about HISA, and we talked about that, mm-hmm. and it just seems like, boy, that is really up in the air right now, in limbo. And I was curious. I have not talked to any racing officials, but it looks like you did check in with some of the folks down at Maryland. And what are their thoughts right now with the situation with HISA, and how are they going forward?
Well, it's a really good question, Seth. And you know, as you referenced, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that Heiss is unconstitutional because it delegates essentially federal regulatory authority to a private entity without sufficient oversight. And in that ruling applies to the Fifth Circuit, which is Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. It does not apply to any other place. So any other state, it does not apply to. So in Maryland, and to my knowledge, most states are proceeding sort of business as usual. Heiss is still in place. It still exists. It's still the law. We need to follow it. And that's certainly what they're doing in Maryland, and talking to some other folks, that seems to be, in general, the norm. Now, there's another case also proceeding in the Sixth Circuit, which includes Kentucky and a couple other states, and that's set for oral arguments on Tuesday. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And I just saw a report this morning that Mitch McConnell, the senator from Kentucky, whose support of Heiss was really kind of conclusive, kind of the main thing that pushed it over the top, is now pushing for a legislative fix during the lame duck session. And I would imagine a legislative fix would clarify that the Federal Trade Commission has full oversight and full ability to modify Heiss, direct Heiss to do things, prohibit Heiss from doing things, you know, that the FTC is really in charge, which the current law does not allow. So there are a lot of moving parts right now, and the next couple of months are going to be really, really interesting with Heiss, because the other thing, of course, is the drug portion, the medication control and anti-doping portion is set to come online January 1st. And if the Fifth Circuit ruling, you know, absent other developments, the Fifth Circuit ruling is supposed to go into effect January 10th. So literally 10 days after the medication control portion comes into existence, Heiss is unconstitutional in a couple of pretty important states, Texas and Louisiana, where the fairgrounds is. So there's a lot that's coming down the pike, and it's definitely a story we're going to want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's crazy because, as you say, I mean, it, you know, just went into effect a few months ago, and things, you know, for the most part here in New York, it seems like things have just kind of proceeded, you know, in a normal fashion. We were kind of under some of those rules already, but even the changes didn't change things up significantly. It didn't seem like here. But as you say, then things were going to be implemented still in the future. So this really set things into limbo. And you mentioned it, and Matt Hagerty also talked about this next court case is interesting. Will they go in the other direction, or will they concur? Going to be very intriguing to see how it plays out, no question about it. But again, it's
yeah,
just...
and one thing I should, let me just jump in there real quick, because one other thing I should say is Alan Foreman, who is the general counsel, he's the head of the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Associations, which is one of the sort of two main horsemen's group umbrella organizations, and he's an attorney, and he said his expectation is that if the Sixth Circuit were to rule this unconstitutional, meaning both the Fifth and the Sixth had done it, and you know, his expectation was kind of that the Supreme Court might not even hear the case at this point, because there would then be sort of two circuits with the same ruling, and he imagined that state attorneys general at that point would start advising their racing commissions that Heiss is unconstitutional and they need to not follow it at that point. So just one more sort of twist in the story. A lot of things are going to happen, and they're going to happen pretty quickly, I'd expect.
Yeah, very interesting, and more than interesting, I guess, given the, you know, the how the industry was kind of falling into line, but we'll see how it plays out. All right, let's go back to yesterday. I said top of the show, the weekend was fun. Down at Tampa, it was all two-year-olds. We had the Demoiselle and the Remsen yesterday at Aqueduct, and we've looked at a bunch of those races, and it's always fun this time of year to look at the two-year-olds and then kind of project a few weeks down when the calendar turns and they become three-year-olds. Are these horses we should kind of keep our ear to the ground and keep watching? And I wanted to get some thoughts on the action yesterday at Laurel. We'll kick things off looking at the Maryland Juvenile Filly. And the winner here, kind of interesting, because it's a Charlie Baker trainee. So this one, based in New York, but in two starts so far, has been down in Maryland. Broke the maiden down in Pimlico, middle of September, and then the follow-up here. This is Malibu Moonshine. We're watching, taking the lead here in the stretch as the 6-5 favorite. Fast-tracked second. Gormley's Gabriella runs third. But again, 2-for-2 now for the Maryland-bred Malibu Moonshine. Looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, sure did. Interesting sort of side note on this horse. There was another horse named Malibu Moonshine who was born literally 20 years ago and ran in the 2005 Preakness. So those of us with a little bit long memories from Maryland are find this a little confusing for our tiny pea brains here that there's another Malibu Moonshine on the scene. But this horse, Charlie Baker had said, we were planning to start in New York, but then we said, well, she's a Maryland bred. Let's run in Maryland. The purse is okay. The competition's easier. You get bonuses when you break your maiden there. And so they did that and won pretty nicely despite a little bit of a troubled trip. And then yesterday, again, they had been pointing at the Maryland Million, and she got a little fever, got a little cough, missed some training, couldn't do that. Comes back here, another nice win. I mean, I felt like this was a race where you wanted to beat kind of the Chickiness and Skylar Sister, kind of the local horses that had been running who are okay, but I kind of felt like you wanted to look at Charlie Baker's horse and the runner-up, Fast Track, who went off at just tremendously high odds. It was 14-1. I felt like those were the two horses you had to look at here because they're the two horses that might be something a little bit better than just kind of the local horse, and that's kind of how it played out. I think I talked to Charlie Baker afterwards. He kind of feels like, she might be okay in open company. So one to kind of keep an eye on, rallied nicely to win yesterday.
Yeah, as I say, 2-for-2. You mentioned Fast Track, and off the debut victory, escaped at a decent little price. I'm wondering if that's because the horse debuted for the claiming tag. Now, debuted for the claiming tag with the waiver as a Maryland bred, so they protected the horse. But I wonder if people looked at that and were a little suspect of the field. And maybe for folks who looked at the performance rather than the money line there, wound up with a decent little exact of, $55 and change.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, and they probably looked, the buyers of Fast Track and Malibu Moonshine were more or less the same, but, Malibu Moonshine won by 6 points and Fast Track won by a neck, and I wonder if they held that against her a little bit. But, she had run that was a really good effort because she's going 7/8, first time out of the box, runs hard every step of the way and still running at the end and wins that race. So I thought that was a very good effort. And obviously, look, Malibu Moonshine is a little bit better horse right now, and that was pretty clear and won pretty easily yesterday. But I think Fast Track didn't do anything wrong. I thought that was a really nice effort for her and one she can move forward off of. I don't guess we'll get 14-1 next time on her, though.
So two to kind of keep our eyes on going forward amongst the fillies. Now, the boys were in the Maryland Juvenile, $100,000 up for grabs, also 7 furlongs. We're going to watch here. Post Time came in 2-for-2 and 2 daylight victories and subsequently goes off as the even money favorite. But a close-up second choice at $1.10 to $1, Johnny Z from Albany. And I told you when we were in the break, I was at the harness track last night, ran into one of the family members that Johnny Z from Albany is named in memory of. So that was kind of interesting. I said, tune in tomorrow. I'm talking about the race. So it was a nice performance for that one. Clearly a second. I thought the top two were pretty good in here, although Post Time now 3-for-3, all 3 daylight victories.
Yeah, I think you and I have spoken about Johnny Z from Albany's backstory, and Mike Zanella, one of the partners of the owner breeder Chip Reed, and Johnny Z was his brother, and they used to go to Saratoga together and whatnot. So that's a fun story. But Post Time also a really fun story, and this was an ultra impressive victory because Eric Camacho, who's riding this horse, basically gives him his cue at the 3/8 and almost doesn't move a muscle the rest of the way. And he just runs right past Johnny Z from Albany. And, you know, sometimes, as you know, sometimes in these state bred races, Seth, the horses are just kind of horses. Johnny Z from Albany is a horse. He's a real horse. He's put up pretty good buyer speed figures for a two-year-old. He's run pretty fast, was very impressive in the Maryland Million, and post time ran past him like he was tied to a post. That was a really, really good effort. And there's kind of a neat backstory here. Eric Camacho, who's riding him, is his gallop boy in the mornings. He had been a jockey, had basically not won a race from 2016 till the first time he rode this horse, so 6 years between wins. Hadn't won a stake in 9 years until yesterday. So he's kind of bringing Eric Camacho's riding career back from the ashes. Post time, you'd think it's just kind of a generic name, but it's actually named in honor. The owner is Ellen Charles of Hillwood Stable. Her grandmother was Marjorie Merriweather Post, so she's named in honor of her grandmother. Just like a lot of kind of cool things going on with this horse, and this is a big, big effort. This is a horse you want to keep an eye on. Talking with trainer Brittany Russell afterwards, she said, well, you know, we have the series of stakes here for three-year-olds that lead to the Preakness, but we might have to think outside the box with this horse. So you want to keep an eye on this one. Might be coming to a racetrack near you soon.
Yeah, interesting. I'm glad you pointed out the jock, because as you talked about that, I looked, and yeah, the record this year, 2 for 2. Both on this horse, now 3 for 3, all on this horse. That's crazy. Speaking of Brittany Russell, continues at the high percentage down there, and I believe Sheldon Russell came back or coming back today?
He came back. He rode a race on Friday, finished second on a horse of Brittany's on Friday. I think he may have some more mounts today. He's taking it slow. You know, you feel terrible for the guy. I was talking with another rider, J.D. Acosta, who said, you know, he's like, when I saw Sheldon went down, I'm like, oh, no, not again. Yeah. And, you know, he's a really good rider, and he's just injury prone. And so, and as you get a little older, he's got a couple kids, and so he's going to take it slow. He's going to come back, and, you know, once he's back full, he'll be one of the best riders on the grounds again. But he just has had a lot of bad luck over the years.
Yeah, but tough, but wish him the best on coming back as well. All right, Frank, appreciate the thoughts, because, again, as I say, those two-year-old races yesterday, I think have one or two at least coming out of each of them to watch as the calendar turns in a few weeks and they become three-year-olds. So wanted to touch on those and get some ideas. And I will remind people again, theracingbiz.com, great spot to check on racing in the Mid-Atlantic region. Frank, again, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
It's my pleasure, Seth. Thanks for having me. And, keep an eye on post time. That's one to watch.
Absolutely. Frank Vespi, theracingbiz.com. Again, a couple of nice two-year-old stakes down at Laurel yesterday. I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I mentioned it earlier, but worth reiterating, it is closing day for the fall meet at Del Mar. That means their pick six wager is a mandatory, and there's over $500,000 in the pool, so keep that in mind. Also, the Matriarch today with Regal Glory and Dolce Zell in their Pizza Bianca. Fun action at Del Mar for closing day. But I'll be back in about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. I have some Gulfstream, some Aqueduct to look at, and the Sulky side. We'll look at some Saratoga Harness as well on this Sunday afternoon. So it should be fun, and make sure you tune in and join us. But we appreciate your tuning in this morning for Racing Across America on a Sunday morning, recapping some of the really nice stakes acting, because, again, yesterday in New York was crazy. Good storylines, great racing, and hopefully you cash some tickets as well to make it even better. We'll try to do all of that again this afternoon as far as cashing tickets. So, again, appreciate your tuning in this morning for Racing Across America. Check us out in about an hour or so for OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.